on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this April 1st edition of InvestTalk. We are the first day of the second quarter. The first quarter's ended, and it was a down day. Okay, it's not day to day. It's not something you need to worry about. So I'm here to help bring the average investor, to be an above average investor, to raise your skill level a little bit and answer your questions about money. That's what I'm here for. 888-99-CHART is how you reach me during this hour, anytime with your question or comment. We're live 4 to 5 Monday through Friday Pacific time. Well, we talk regularly about risk. I know I do. I'm not sure if Justin does, but we generally do talk regularly about risk. It's not a subject of worry, but it's something you need to be concerned with. I don't want you to worry about it, but I do want you to be aware of it and understand how to manage it. I mean, it's a factor in managing the overall portfolio that many people just kind of ignore. They buy individual stocks or mutual funds, and they don't really look at the whole package. They say, well, how much risk am I really taking? Now, we've got a neat little tool that will help you determine what kind of risk you want to take, and we can then show you what kind of risk you are taking using the same software. You can use it. It's free. It's called a free risk analysis tool on our website, and it scores you from 0 to 99, and 0 being cash, 99 being extremely high risk. And just to give you a scale, 80 is the stock market, the S&P 500. 85 is the NASDAQ 100. Okay, and the Dow is like 79. So very close to the S&P 500 as far as riskiness in this piece of software that we provide for you. And what we do is it asks you questions about how much risk you're comfortable with. Okay, and there's only 3 or 4 or 5 of them. It's pretty simple. And then it gives you a risk score. And then if you send me your portfolio, I can put it in the other side of this risk analysis tool and come up with a risk score for your portfolio. And then we compare it with what risk you want, with what risk you have, make sure it's lined up. It's kind of neat. So I think it's something you could use. Go to investtalk.com, take a look for it. It's kind of near the 2/3 of the way down or something, free risk analysis. You see it, click on it, and it's pretty simple. And here are 3 suggestions for you, especially if you're very reluctant to expose yourself to too much risk. Think about this. Before you do anything, learn about the types of investments that exist and what their risk over history has been. How much have they gone up and down? And if you're absolutely brand new to investing, read some basic books. We have a good list on investtalk.com. And you can join an Investing 101 type meetup group and do some research, such as online forums or do-it-yourselfers. Investopedia has great tutorials there, investopedia.com. Second, keep your costs low. Whatever you're investing, keep a strategy simple and costs low. You can use diversified ETFs, exchange-traded funds, or index funds, mutual funds. You can be very diverse. You don't have to be an expert in stock picking. You don't have to pick stocks. Let somebody else do it for you. Third, a little bit of knowledge can be dangerous. Don't get over your head. Just because you read a book, don't try to beat the market. That's when mistakes are made. You can't really beat the market. It's very, very difficult. Okay, so many money issues can get quite complex. And if you'd like to talk directly or correspond by email or to Justin or myself, you can always get a note to us directly by going to investtalk.com and clicking on the Contact Steve or Contact Justin button there. Okay, let's see if we can come up with an answer here on the program. Our calls are always live. Give us a call. We have our 24-hour listener line. You can call that anytime you want. But we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. We're going to go talk to James first in San Diego. How are you doing, James?
Fine, Steve. How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, What does the chart look like on Philip Morris?
Good old Philip Morris, for everybody that's not familiar. I'd be surprised if anybody's not familiar with Philip Morris. But Philip Morris is a tobacco company. Been around forever. And they used to be beat up all the time because they were getting sued by everybody because it's, you know, smoking causes cancer. And that's kind of behind them now. It's cost them billions upon billions of dollars. But it is pretty much behind them. If you don't know that cigarettes don't cause cancer this day, there's something wrong with you. Philip Morris chart, James, looks pretty weak. It's down to $75 a share now. Wait a minute. Is that the right chart? Philip Morris? Yes, it is. Why am I getting PM?
I know they hit a new low today, and they've been hitting new lows.
Yeah, and there's really no good reason necessarily. Philip Morris, for everybody, manufactured cigarettes worldwide. They're going to make $4.29 this year. After making $5.02 last year and $5.40 a year before, but they're going to bounce a little bit next week, $4.55, and here it is, a $76 stock. So that tells you that it's not cheap and it's not overpriced, James. It's fairly priced with a 5.3% dividend. Where is it going to stop falling? You don't want to pick it up now. Do you own it or you want to buy it?
No, I wanted your opinion.
Okay. It looks like, you know, it could, let's see, it's broken almost all the moving averages. I'm thinking it's going to go to close to around $70 before it stops. That would be my guess.
Oh.
And I think there's nothing wrong with the company. There's nothing wrong with it. Still, it's going to pay that high dividend. It's just getting cheaper. And as it gets cheaper, it gets closer to the strong support, about $70. Okay. James, appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Hi, Steve. How's it going today?
It's going good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I was looking at UPS. I was thinking a good entry point would probably be in the lower 90s, and it's getting close to that right now.
I
was wondering what you thought.
It looks like around, to me, it looks like around 95 is really a pretty strong support. It hit 95 twice last year, and each time it bounced up. So if I, you know, if you go just 1 year, it looks like it's getting, and today is at 96.54. UPS, everybody, delivers packages and documents throughout the United States. If you, you know, you have to live in a cave if you don't know who a UPS is. But that looks like pretty strong support. And the next one below that is the high 80s, 86 to 90. So somewhere in there, that looks, it, you know, looks pretty strong when it gets down to that.
How are the transports looking?
The transports, and you can look at that by looking at the IYT, which is the ETF for the transports. And they look, they're trying to find support right where they are now. It's kind of important that they hold this area. They do not look strong, Art. They do not. They've been trading in a range for ever since November. In this range, and it's at the lower end of that range right now. That's why I say today is a strong support, because it's right there the last few days. Go ahead.
Because I'm just trying to hold off to the summertime, and because I'm figuring it might come back down a little bit further. But
they could. It could. I wouldn't be in a big rush to jump in. I would not right now. I just wouldn't.
Yeah, maybe a half now and half later, something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but just don't be in a rush. I think we're going to get a decent pullback sometime in the next few months, and that's going to be a better opportunity. I also think that the market's going to end the year up, not down.
Oh, okay.
So, but I think we're in between. From now to end of year, we're going to have a pullback somewhere. It's hard for me to know how much, but 10 to 20% would be normal. People, we just haven't seen one of those in a long time. Art, thanks for the call. Thank you very much. 888-99-CHART. We have some reasons to be open to mutual funds that aren't everybody's favorite. Closed-end funds can save you money. Going to be one of our main talking points. Closed-end fund. Do you know what an open-end fund versus a closed-end fund is? Of course, we're going to explain that, and that's one of the reasons why they might be able to save you money. Also, I want to talk about Are we, meaning the United States, in danger of a recession in 2015? No one's talking about it. Do you ever notice that? The economic numbers are getting worse and worse all year long, starting in the last quarter, and they're still not strong. We're not in a recession or anything like that, but the numbers are getting worse. Economic numbers I'm talking about. So are we in a danger of going into recession? And how come no one's really talking about it? Hardly anybody is. Now, I don't think we're going to be in a recession this year, just so you know. But I think it's something that should be discussed. Germany, not Greece, is holding Europe back. Greece is not holding Europe back, but Germany might be. I want to talk about that. I think that's kind of an interesting article I picked up today. In one of the papers this morning, it talked about oil. And we've talked about oil ad nauseum, right? But did you know that supplies gone down $1 billion, a billion barrels of oil in the last, with all the majors, that their reserves have gone down 1 billion barrels of oil? And this is not the first year. This is for last year. This is not the first year that it's gone down, the reserves. Do you know what reserves means? Well, we'll talk about that. But they can't replace their problems there. We got to talk about those problems. And finally, maybe remember our 4% rule that you can take 4% of your money and probably not run out of money in retirement, 4% of your assets? Why isn't that rule as cut and dry as it should be? I want to talk about that rule a little bit because there's caveats with that rule. The rule is good. I like the rule, but it's not in a vacuum. You just can't, it can't be in a vacuum on your personal finances. You've got to determine other things besides just, I can take 4%. Okay? 888-99-CHARTER is our number. What do you want to talk? What's on your mind? Those are the talking points we're going to discuss. The Dow was down 78 today. The NASDAQ was down 21. And the S&P was down 8. So we really have had a flat to negative week so far. And we got Thursday, one more day in the week, because Friday is a holiday. The market's going to be closed. And that's when the jobs, official jobs report comes out on Friday. Today we had the ADP jobs report. A little less than 200,000 expected, but within the realm of striking distance. I don't think it was anything major. It's kind of, and remember, ADP is the private sector jobs, and the official jobs report is private and public sector. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. I'm glad you're here with me today. Do you feel you have a plan for your investing strategy going forward? Do you? And are you fine with making your day-to-day decisions? Do you understand what decisions you're making and how to manage a portfolio? For instance, if you had a good diversified portfolio today, you wouldn't have had that bad of a day, even though the Dow was down. Hopefully you had some gold stocks in your portfolio, because that really would have saved you. Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. Our helpline for Invest Talk is 888-992-4278.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Okay, so we're going to talk about a type of mutual fund called a closed-end fund. And there's ETFs that are closed-end and regular mutual funds that are closed-end. Most that you are familiar, most of the ETFs and mutual funds you're familiar with are what we call open-end funds. And what that means is they trade at net asset value because they keep issuing shares as people keep buying it, and then they sell the positions when people want to redeem it. Well, the problem with that open-endness is that when people panic and try to get out of the mutual fund all at the same time, the mutual fund has no choice but sell stocks in the panic. And so driving prices down more and more and more. In a closed-end fund, which are not common, but there's enough of them out there. In a closed-end fund, they act like more like a stock, because it's a mutual fund that has filed and completed an IPO, initial public offering, and has a finite number of shares outstanding. And then what they do is they take that money and they go buy whatever the fund prospectus says they're going to go buy. Okay, and there is that finite number of shares. So the fund can sell at a premium or discount to the assets they're holding. One thing's nice about a closed-end fund is that the manager can operate his strategy without ever worrying about redemptions, because the fund is not selling selling more shares or anything. You have to buy shares from other people that own them, just like a stock. You have to offer a price, and they have to be willing to sell it to you. That's how you can put trade at higher than whatever the holdings are, value, or lower. And you really like to buy a closed-end fund at discount to the net asset value. So you're buying at less than what the value is. So there are benefits from a closed-end fund. So might want to take a look at them. I hope you'll make a date with Justin and myself on April 25th at the San Jose Hyatt House. It's an important Saturday morning wealth conference. Global value investing, everybody. Finding opportunities in foreign, domestic, and emerging markets. Sign up at InvestTalk.com. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Ruby in Cupertino. How are you doing, Ruby?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
Good. Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it.
Yeah. I have a two-part question. I've been watching Apple, between like 122 to 125 last few days, considering the iWatch coming in, being released and the quarter and results coming up. I wanted to know what your thoughts are, whether it's a good time to buy some Apple at this point.
Actually, I kind of do. Now, I will say that I like Apple. We own Apple. AAPL is a symbol. And it trades sideways to down every few months. For instance, between September and November, it traded sideways for almost 2 months. And then again, it did it then for 2 months to 1.5 months, it shot up. And then it traded sideways again in January to February. And then it shot up again in a month, month and a half. And now, here it is, a little over a month, it's trading down to sideways. I'm kind of thinking that it's kind of a pattern. It's established. And so if you want to buy Apple, it's kind of where you want to buy it. Can it get weaker? Of course, Ruby. It can go down further. But Apple's growth is pretty strong. And as you point out, they're coming out with the iWatch. And I don't know how successful that is. No one really is going to know how successful it is. I'm more excited about Apple Pay and their new larger phones, which they can't seem to manufacture fast enough to sell, because there's a huge demand still for them. So
you think it's a good place to pick up?
I do. I will say this, Ruby. There might be a stock market pullback in the next few months, and Apple will likely pull back with it. But remember, we had a big, almost 10% pullback in October, and Apple did not participate in the pullback. It just went sideways. So I wouldn't worry about the pullback in the market so much. It just, to me, it would mean if it did go down, buy some more. That's what it would mean to me. Appreciate the call, Ruby. That's Apple, AAPL, Apple Computer. It's hard to, they got so much money, and they're growing their earnings this year 34%, and they have it scheduled for another 8% next year. And they're growing, the last quarter, their earnings grew 30%, quarter before that 12%, quarter before that 6%, and for 4 or 5 quarters, it was kind of flat until they came out with a new, bigger iPhone. And that thing just is hotter than can be. And I still like Apple Pay. I'm thinking that could take off. And Justin and I talked about Apple Watch, and we don't know. That's been something that we're not sure about, but I don't discount Apple's ability to sell things. But there's also going to be an Apple TV service, like Netflix kind of thing, where you can, I could see that taking off too, because Apple is pretty good about these things. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So why is no one talking, no economist is predicting any recession this year? And I'm not either, by the way. I don't think so. But why is no one talking about it? Clearly, our economy has slowed, and it's still showing slow numbers. You can blame the bad weather for this most recent quarter, and the stronger dollar in the last 6-8 months is really hurting us. And of course, we had out here in California the port disruptions for months, which really hurt things. maybe why they're not talking about it is because I don't think we're going into recession, and because I think the dollar has probably stopped going up. I think interest rates are still very low, and housing looks still pretty strong. The EU estimates are that it might be growing again for this year. The lower energy costs had means more money in people's pockets, even though the retail sales says they haven't spent it. I have pretty much confident that they'll probably spend some of it. And we're still producing jobs, so maybe that's why they're not talking about it. But, you know, I'll say this. I've been around so long. I mean, I have seen recessions start when just kind of out of the blue. No one expected them, and you could have none of it. Was just unexpected. Here we have, I mentioned yesterday, reasons for us to be worried. And you still got Greece, you still got you got the Middle East, you got Russia causing problems. China's slowing down. The dollar's still very strong. I mean, you got reasons. I just don't know if that's going to happen. I just don't think, not this year. I would more worry about after or when the Fed starts raising rates. Well, of course, they're going to start raising rates this year. I mean, that's what they've said, right? We'll see. Just my personal opinion about that. So today we had the ADP number out. We had the ISM number out today. ISM, Institute Supply Management number. It said that it was a little bit weaker than the month before. ADP jobs was a little bit weaker, but still adding jobs. And even the ISM still above 50%, meaning expansion rather than shrinkage. Just that the number's been weaker. And that's a concern. So could we fall into recession? Yes, we could. Are we? Chances are not that high. April is Financial Literacy Month. Did you know that? A time for everybody to tune in on the ways we improve our financial smarts. And we'll take step one on InvestTalk Personal coming up on the next half hour. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. You can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART. This is talk, everybody.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. If you live in the Bay Area, save this date, April 25th, at the San Jose Hyatt House. It's our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, The Real Rewards of Global Value Investing, How to Find Good Buys in Foreign, Domestic, and Emerging Markets. Sign up on InvestTalk.com, and there's a $10 discount if you sign up by April 20th.
888-992-4278. Pretty easy number to remember. Give me a call. Your questions come first, as always, whether it's a stock or strategy or just something about 401ks, IRAs. We're here for you. Same number, 888-99-CHART. Larry called from Chula Vista.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling on a generic question in regards to mutual funds. When you look at the risk and they have an R, looking at smart money, they have an R squared, alpha, and a beta number. Now, I understand that has to do with risk and return. The higher the number, the lower the number. But what number, what is like the baseline number? I appreciate you taking my call.
Okay, that's a pretty good question. Let's talk about beta. Let's take one of them. The one that's probably the one that most people use, most people can understand, and most people should look at it and do look at it. And best beta. Beta is a measure of risk. Remember how I talk about risk all the time? All three of those are a measure of risk, but it's a measure of risk against the stock market. The beta of your holdings, your stock or your mutual fund, against the risk of the stock market. And a beta of one means that there's the same, the holdings that the mutual fund or the stock that you're looking at goes up and down the same percentage, at least historically, as the S&P 500. Because the beta, S&P 500, is the baseline, and it's 1. So if you have a beta, you're looking at Apple. Let's look at it because I still have it up. Apple has a beta of 0.98, meaning it's just two little points below the volatility of the stock market. Okay, overall. So, when you're in a market and you say, gee, you know, I'm pretty scared of this market, you would rather be in a bunch of low beta stocks or mutual funds because they won't go down as much as the stock market. But if you're in a market where you think the market's going to go up, you kind of would like to have high beta stocks, okay, the ones who move up. If it's a beta of 1.3 or 130, depending how they want to express it, that means that's 30% more volatile than the stock market. Well, you want the up volatility when the market's moving up, but you don't want that down volatility when the market's moving down. And remember, a beta of 130 means it's 30% more volatile than the stock market. So you can see it's not good or bad in and of itself. It's good or bad in relationship to the overall market. So you have to be, you know, cognizant of what you're buying. Okay? So be very aware of your betas. And alpha, R squared, they're also risk analysis type tools. Okay? 888-99-CHARGE is our number. Well, how about it's time for InvestTalk Personal, the day-to-day personal finance issues that can change your life and really does normally impact it. April is Financial Literacy Month, and probably it's Financial Literacy Month because it's tax month. And, of course, the first step, like anything else, is to make a commitment to change. If you want to start putting money aside, you want to get smarter about your finances, you have to make a decision to change. Now, and you have to examine your attitudes about money. What is your attitude about money? See, a lot of people's attitude is, I have money, let's go spend it. I make it a raise, I can go buy a new car. I have a raise, I can go do this or that with it. And it's mostly about spending. That's the attitude. How about changing your attitude and say, money is an asset. What should I do with this asset? Can I grow this asset? Instead of thinking, what can I buy or spend on with the asset, how about making it work for you? Think about it differently. Instead of, oh, I got more money, I could spend it. Don't spend it. Why? And so that's the first step. Most people spend it mostly because they're disorganized. They just kind of neglect their financial health. They don't think about it or worry about it. You know, and if I don't have money, I'll just use my credit card. So you got to get organized. Understand what you're spending. You know, and so part of organization is don't be cluttered with all paperwork, all these old bills and all this stuff that you have hanging around that you think you need to hold on to. You don't really need to hold on to a lot of stuff. You don't need to hold on to bills, utility bills, unless you want to compare last year's with this year's. You don't need to, you know, old checks or checks that you don't need to keep them anymore. Your tax records you got to keep. Got to keep those for 7 years. Okay, 7 years. But after that, you don't. I throw mine away after, usually on the ninth year, I start throwing away the old 9 years ago and just keep throwing away because I don't really need. If you're fixing your house up, I'd keep all those receipts until you sell the house. But, you know, get organized. Try to get organized. Keep yourself in shape, financial shape. Get out from under the clutter. And that's InvestTalk Personal for this day of Financial Literacy Month. Do you have an idea that you want me to talk about? Give me a call. 888-99-CHART. Go to InvestTalk.com and click on Contact Steve and send me an email.
How do you get a professional second opinion on your current retirement accounts without incurring a fee or any obligation? Steve schedules a couple of dates each month to meet with listeners as a free service. The next date's at the Orange County office on April 15th. To reserve your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment. Someone will get right back to you.
Hi, Steve. This is Oscar from San Francisco. wondering what you think about Markle. I'm thinking about buying it. Ticker symbol MKL. Thank you very much.
Markle Corporation. I don't. That, let me first. I don't sound familiar to me. There's not too many companies I haven't heard about. Markle Corporation. It's in the insurance property casualty business. Offers specialty insurance products and programs for niche markets. Also writes treaty reinsurance contracts. You know the treaty reinsurance contract? That's a company that insures other companies, other insurance companies. Treaty reinsurance is an insurance policy that insures insurance companies. Okay? You'd be surprised how complex insurance business is. It's a almost $11 billion company, so it's not small. It's out of Glen Allen, Virginia, and I'm not familiar with it. That's kind of surprising. It has very good earnings, $23.32 this year, $23.97 next year, up 5%, up 3%. Sales growth used to be much stronger a few quarters ago, but they're still growing 4 to 10%, somewhere around that range. And it's been a very strong company as far as the stock price. Stock price is $770 a share. You didn't hear me wrong, $770 per share, okay? The P.E. is around 35, and that is at the high range of its five-year range, high end of its five-year range. And then the five-year range has been 12 to 35. So it's kind of expensive. It's a very solid company. Looks very solid. Management owns 3%. That's pretty good for an $11 billion company. Mutual funds have been buyers. About 50 new companies went from 300 to 350 in the last year. 50 new mutual fund companies coming in. That bodes well for the company. They don't have much debt. Looks like the finances are very strong. MKL, Markle Corporation. So what you really want to do is wait for a pullback. It was $700 a share 2 months ago. Now it's $770. So that's 10% rise in 2 months, while the market did nothing in those 2 months. Okay, and the market's flat. So that's pretty good. So you want to buy it? I mean, last year it was selling for in the 650 range, 640. I mean, it got low as 620 last year. Now 770. So you will probably get a pullback at some point. Looks strong. I kind of like it. No dividend though, which is surprising. No dividend. 888-99-CHART. Okay, we talk about oil ad nauseum. We're talking about how much oil costs per barrel and how the demand in oil in the United States has slowly fallen, where the rest of the world is still increasing, how pressure on oil prices has come down because of China's growth is slowing, and barrel of oil has fallen because of a strong dollar. But I'm going to talk about something that most people don't talk about and probably don't understand, and that is oil reserves. The majors meaning, when I say majors, I'm talking about Chevron, Exxon, Royal Dutch, Total, the big five, okay, BP, the big five. The majors, how they run their business, besides refining and exploring for oil, they also have what they call reserves. Reserves is how much oil they have available to sell. And we're talking about reserves in the ground. You know, they have production. They have a big pool of oil somewhere. They're sucking it out of the ground, right? That's called reserves. And all companies want to replace the reserves because that's their future income. Now, these five majors. The five majors have like 78 billion barrels of oil last year. 78 billion barrels of oil in reserves. That's what they have, 78.6. The year before, they had 80 billion barrels of oil. Over the last several years, they're having a lot of trouble replacing their reserves. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means, you know, at some point, they're going to run out of oil. Now, we're maybe talking 30 years from now. I'm not talking about tomorrow, the next day. But it is important if reserves continue to fall. And they're saying, they're meaning these majors, saying we're not finding, and we're looking hard for any major oil find in the world. There is no major oil find that they can that they think exists anymore. They kind of know where it all is. I kind of have my doubts about that, because I'm sure there's a, remember, have you explored everywhere in the ocean? Two-thirds of the world is covered in water. So when we talk about reserves, they're talking about oil that is available, not oil that, that exists that they don't have a way to get to. And what's amazing to me is usually when the price of oil goes up and up and up and up, reserves usually increase. So I think it's important that we recognize, number one, that oil reserves are falling. We still have plenty of oil. And number two, that will affect the price at some point, upward. And number three, I don't want you to worry about it. I just don't think it's that important of an issue, but it is something that means that down the road, oil prices will recover. I just can't tell you exactly when, but they are. They are going to recover. Off air, Jerry called from San Ramon about a particular stock, ISRG, ISRG. So we'll talk about that. That's Intuitive Surgical, ISRG. I'm typing in a couple places here. Intuitive Surgical has had a great run, and I'll tell you why. Because in 2009, it was at $84 a share. Today, it's $506. Yeah, no way can you say that's not a great run. Mind you, in 2012, it got up to 594. That was the high then. 2013, 585 was a high that year. And right, and 2014, the high was 541, and now it's 506. So I just want to remind you that the numbers are, the price of Intuitive Surgical is not, is has topped. And but their earnings are still increasing, but not nearly the growth that they used to have. This quarter, they're going to grow 5% in their sales, then 10% last quarter. But the quarters before that, they were down. Intuitive Surgical, ISRG, develops advanced surgical systems designed to improve and surgery and minimal invasive surgery. They have the, well, I think it's called the Michelangelo, where computer does the surgery and the doctor manipulates things. Yeah. Anyways, they're going to have a 9% increase in earnings this year and a 13% increase in earnings next year. The PE currently is 31. The five-year average is 18 to 50. Return on equity is very good. They don't pay a dividend. It's an $18, $19 billion company. I don't think, personally, I wouldn't be buying it at this point. I mean, the only reason is because I need a catalyst for growth, and I'm not sure we have it. Where's the catalyst going to come from? And they'd have to come up with something big. They're going to repurchase $1 billion in stock, but you know, out of 18 billion, that's not bad. That's like 5%. That's repurchasing stock has been very helpful for a lot of the companies because earnings, sales aren't that strong. Anyways, that's Intuitive Surgical, ISRG. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and you're listening to Invest Talk. I would like you to give me a call as we move into the last segment already of the hour. 888-99-CHARGE is our number, 888-992-4278.
If you'd like to see more about KPP Financial Select Portfolios, like our Balanced Income Portfolio, just click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com.
Okay, we're going to go talk to Dave in Cupertino. However you say it, Dave, how you doing?
Hi, Steve. How you doing? It's Cupertino.
Yeah.
And I have a question. Listen to your show regularly, and it regards support levels at certain prices. I know you referred to that in a stock discussed just probably 15, 20 minutes ago.
Right.
I forget what it was, but I just, what is that really, is that volume related, or what is that, when you say support level at certain prices,
okay,
where it looks like it's a good point to buy,
okay,
in at a certain price, what does that really mean?
Okay, good question, Dave, appreciate it. Okay, let's talk about support, and there's what we call support and resistance levels. Support, when you hear the word support, what I'm looking at is a chart. A one-year daily chart is what we start with, okay? And we look at a one-year daily chart, and we look at it and say, okay, what's the price today in relationship to all this past year's prices? And you know how how stocks move. They move up and down and up and down and up and down. And sometimes they trade in a channel. Sometimes it's an upward-moving channel or downward-moving channel. You know, the trend is up or the trend is down. And so when I look at a stock and say it's at support, that means that that stock has been at this price level before, and every time it has, or at least the last few times it has, it's bounced up from that number.
Oh.
Because it's what we call found support. And what you're looking at is psychology, Dave. What have the investors and traders done when it's at this price? And to be honest, Dave, all it really is people like me looking at a chart and reacting to it and say, hey, it's at support, and we go and buy it. That's all it is.
So
it's no magic.
That's all it is.
Yeah, there's no magic involved.
Nope.
And so when I look at these charts, just so you know, it tends to be true. It's not always true that support or resistance is here, but it tends to be true because investors, professionals especially, make it happen just by their action.
I see.
So don't think it's...
Go
ahead, I'm sorry, Dave.
No, go ahead. Well, when you say there's resistance levels also, there's support levels and resistance levels. So what would be an example of a resistance level?
Okay, let's take a look at the S&P 500 right now. The S&P 500 went up to about 2113 for a few days back in late February. Then it went right back up to 2111 at 5 days ago. So it's
right.
What we call, that's a double top. It's top twice. And that is now resistance because it can't seem to break through that.
I see.
Now, that doesn't mean it won't break through it, because it will. But now, you have short-term resistance at that number, and that is the resistance that I'm looking at right now. Now, from a short-term period, also the S&P has support at 2035, but it has a lot stronger support right around 2000.
So looking at a chart, you can tell where the volume is at that level?
I can tell you the volume at those levels, but I'm looking at not necessarily the volume, but just the price action. But if I take it further, I go say, well, let me see what the volume is at those numbers. And does the volume spike? Does the volume stay steady? Or is there less volume? And that tells you, the volume might tell you, oh, it looks like there's a lot more volume, so it's going to break through resistance or break down from support. Okay? So now you're getting more and more into chart reading and the different things that we all look at. It gets complex.
Yeah, I try to do a combination of both. Look at the fundamentals first, and then if it's something that looks interesting, it's got good fundamentals, had it for quite some time, then I'll look at the stock.
That's what I do.
Stock chart.
That's exactly what I do.
Put some averages in there, and frankly, I've done that, and I've gotten hit. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily work out that the stock's going to keep appreciating.
Yeah, it just
from that
tends,
buy-in point.
Yeah, okay. Dave, you're doing what the professionals do, and it just tends to be true. It's not always true. Thanks for the call, Dave. Thanks for the call. Before we go, do you know about our Invest Talk Insiders? These are listeners who have signed up for our Invest Talk Extras. Access to our recorded webinars is one of them. It's free. You can sign up right now on investtalk.com. I'm Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for being here today.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.